John, we miss so much of its meaning if we take it literally. And I was reading some words from John Shelby Spong, and he says, the words of the Gospel of John are designed to lead us beyond literal meaning into a life-giving relationship with the divine. So let's look at this ninth chapter of John. It's entitled, A Man Born Blind Receives Sight. As he walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had said this, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva and spread the mud on the man's eyes, saying to him, go wash in the pool Siloam, which means sent. Then he went and washed and came back able to see. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar began to ask, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? Some were saying, it is he. Others were saying, no, but it is someone like him. He kept saying, I am the man. But they kept asking him, then how are your eyes opened? He answered, the man called Jesus made the mud, spread it on my eyes, and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. Then I went and washed and received my sight. They said to him, where is he? And he said, I don't know. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. Then the Pharisees also began to ask him how he had received his sight. Then he said to them, he put mud on my eyes. Then I washed, and now I see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not of God, for he does not observe the Sabbath. But others said, how can a man who is a sinner perform such signs? And they were divided. So they again said to the blind man, what do you say about him? It was your eyes he opened. He said, he is a prophet. The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight. And they asked him, is this your son who you say was born blind? Then how does he see now? His parents answered, we know this is our son, and we know that he was born blind, but we do not know how it is that he now sees, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that anyone who confessed Jesus to be the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, he is of age, ask him. So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind, and they said to him, give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner. He answered, I do not know whether he is a sinner. One thing I do know, though, I was blind, now I see. They said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered them, I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? Then they reviled him, saying, you are his disciples, but we are the disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, We do not know where he comes from. The man answered, Here is an astonishing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does listen to one who worships him and obeys his will. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. They answered him, You were born entirely in sins, and you are trying to teach us? And they drove him out. Jesus heard that they had driven him out, and when he found him, he said, Do you believe in the Son of Man? He answered, And who is he, sir? Tell me so that I may believe in him. Jesus said to him, You have seen him, and the one speaking with you is he. He said, Lord, I believe, and he worshiped him. Jesus said, I came into this world for judgment, so that those who do not see may see, and those who do see may become blind. Some of the Pharisees heard him say this and said to him, Surely we are not blind, are we? Jesus said to them, If you were blind, you would not have... Ooh, this is so weird. If you were blind, you would not have sin. But now that you say we see, your sin remains. Let's hear what the Spirit is telling us about this.
I have no idea. So when you're hearing something like this, this just came to me. So this is, I start with a sidebar and the squirrel. But do you ever get the impression that Jesus was a very patient individual? Because when you listen to this story and you're like, I can't believe we're hearing this again. Didn't we just say that? Didn't I just say that? Why are we doing it? Okay, Claire, what did you say, Jim? God, you pick long readings. Goes on and on and on. There's a frustration that seems to happen that people just aren't getting it. This is one of my favorite quotes. And I think it would make a really good bumper sticker. Maybe that would be a good fundraiser. Know the rules well so that you can break them effectively. Dalai Lama 14, the current Dalai Lama. Know the rules well so you can break them effectively. My wife and I went to see a production of Cabaret yesterday at UCCS. It was probably one of the best productions I've ever seen. Not of Cabaret, but period. It was a college production. And we had both gotten to see Joel Gray do his revival in Baltimore years ago in the early 90s. Anybody here not see this? Not familiar with the show Cabaret or the movie? Okay, so the last one is playing today at UCCS. Go. So just to set the tone a little bit, this is a play that takes place in the 1930s, just before World War II, in Berlin. And it is known for its shocking portrayal of Berlin's nightclub debauchery. It has wonderful music and dancing. It has, no kids, I could really go into detail now. It's sex on top of sex on top of sex. The characters are a mix of provocative and promiscuous women, men, someone in between, someone pretending to be in between, this one with that one with this one. But there is a freedom that is happening in this nightclub that is saying, we don't care who you are welcome here. You are beautiful. However, we forgot how dark this show is, even in the midst of all its beautiful music. As I said, it's a story of many diverse lives, but these lives are on the brink of decimation, imprisonment, and death at the hands of the Nazis. I found myself at the end unexpectedly dissolved into tears. The MC takes off her coat at the end of the show. And what is typical is a character who is in the striped pajamas of the camps with the Star of David. Only this time, the MC had a pink triangle sewn onto her shirt, designating her as one who would perish in the camps. As we left, I was reminded of the poem that is often credited to Reverend Martin Niemöller, who at first was a Nazi sympathizer. I did not know that until I researched that. But you've all heard this poem. First they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. And as I reflected on this show and the historical implications of it, I asked myself the inevitable question that we all do when we are thrown back into the history that we would prefer not to be thrown back into. How could something like this happen? Now, it was not my intention to begin today's sermon with such a gloomy tale, and yet here's the weather. But I found myself so moved by this performance that I had to ask that question once again. How could something like this happen? And the bigger question, could it happen again? And it's ironic that today is the day we arrive at Richard Rohr's fifth principle. We will support true authority, the ability to author life in others, regardless of the group. If it is true, then it has to be true everywhere. That's what he says. I'm going to read that again. We will support true authority, the ability to author life in others, regardless of the group. If it is true, then it has to be true everywhere. What do you think? We will support true authority. Sounds a little Nazi-ish, don't you think? Yeah. Everywhere. Let me read it to you differently. We will support true authority, the ability to author life in others, regardless of the group. If it is true, then it has to be true everywhere. Same words. How many of you cringe when you hear the word authority? I know, I hide it well. We often think of authority as something that we all must believe and obey. And to an extent, that is true. We have traffic laws, right? We have to obey that. We have laws of science, right? You have to obey laws of science. Laws of mathematics. Laws of gravity. If we weren't obeying those, I'd be talking to you somewhere up there. But sometimes we get caught up in defining what authority is from a sociological, but even more commonly from a religious perspective. And that's where it gets a little sketchy. How many of you think of dogmas and doctrines and creedal statements and biblical literalism when you hear me talk about the authority of the church? We can all point to a time, I'm sure, when we have seen or we have experienced the misuse of authority, especially in church. I dare one of you to raise your hand to say you've never seen that. But it's easy to get caught up in this notion. And this notion that we're talking about is something called tribalism. Tribalism, it's that idea that we stick with those who think like us, right? Who think like us, who maybe even dress like us, who like our laws, our values, heck, even the way we talk. If I hear somebody from New Jersey, I promise you, I swear to God, you're going to hear me start talking like I'm from Jersey. We hang out with people who dress like us, who talk like us, who believe like us, even like the foods that we like. It's human nature to be with those with whom we feel comfortable. What Rohr says about tribal thinking is this. Tribal thinking allows us to build on a certain sense of ourselves as loving and altruistic because we are that way to a certain degree inside our certain tribe, inside our family, inside our ethnicity, inside our neighborhood, or inside our religion. Where we strengthen the social bonds that, in fact, profit us in the long run. You think like me, I think like you, I'll take care of you, you take care of me, we're good. Works for both of us. Such a social identity does wonders for personal identity, or lack thereof, but in fact, we can now be quite selfish and often violent towards other groups, and such negativity will actually be considered a virtue, because if I don't like them, and you don't like them, and we don't like them, we must be right. Our ego is protected from both sides. We get to be selfish while thinking of ourselves as loving, generous, and even sacrificial. We may even think that we're inclusive under the norms that we create, especially when we're trying to get others to be like us. Except when they don't behave like us, we often then need to demonize them, don't we? So that we can, I'm inclusive, come on in and be like me. You don't want to? Then there's something wrong with you. Recently, in this whole healthcare debacle, there was a congressman who used scripture in a very interesting way. I found it comical and disgusting at the same time. And this is what he offered. What he said is, we are not responsible for providing healthcare for the poor or the homeless. And the reason why is because Jesus said, the poor will always be with you. And we know that even if they have health care, they're probably going to go to the emergency rooms anyway because they don't know how to use this stuff and they don't want to use it. Therefore, we don't need to provide it. I have no doubt that he believed that to be true. That is how he took that scriptural quote and interpreted it in such a way, as did probably the people that he spends time with, to benefit him and his tribe. And historically, humanity has used the notion of authority or truth, not just to inform and direct our positive behavior, but also to justify our negative actions. If we use authority to be divisive, judgmental, violent, or exclusive, it's not ultimate authority, but it is authority of our own doing or of our own tribe. I remember having a friend in college. This was somebody that I was such good. We were in campus ministry together. We hung out together. And the year after I graduate, I came out to her. And she said, well, I'll still love you. I said, well, that's that supposed to mean? She goes, Claire, there is an ultimate truth and an ultimate authority. We can't argue with that. And you're wrong. This is the kind of tribal authority that probably allowed such a devastating event, such as the Holocaust. Yes, there were a lot of other factors involved with that. But it begins with the complacency of many to get things started. Even the Pope during the time never said anything against the atrocities because of his stance on the otherness of Jews, of gypsies, and of queers. Even after the Allies freed the Jews, queers were still kept in the camps to die. Did you know that?
No.
And so on the one hand, you have this group that comes in liberating, and on the other hand, their tribalism kept another group down. But it was authoritative. It's the way the world was thinking. So then we come to this reading today, this very confusing reading, this very boring reading after a time, and we're wondering what it is that's going on. What it is that Jesus is trying to get across. Know the rules well so you can break them effectively. And this is basically what Jesus is saying to the Pharisees. He's saying, look, I know that you are annoyed that I healed this man on the Sabbath. But I also know that you're annoyed because you wanted to keep this man blind. You wanted this man to be blind because he represented your notion of what sin looked like. Maybe not his sin, but the sin of his people. And it represented what happens when you do not obey what we know you should obey. Therefore, by curing him of his blindness, you have completely abolished our whole way of thinking tribally. You have said, no, that's not what's going on here. And so I'm going to break that law, and I'm going to show you it has nothing to do with his otherness. He kind of gets to the spirit of the law, and the Jewish leaders are really upset that he does this. But what he is doing is he is demonstrating exactly what Rohr is talking about when he talks about this notion of authority. He is talking about what is this consummate and ultimate authority. It's not an authority that we come up with. It's not an authority that our tribe comes up with, that our country, that our religion comes up with. It is an authority that belongs to one and one only, and that is our beloved. And Jesus, in his brilliance, as Rohr says, a master teacher knows when the law is achieving its purpose and when it's not, and knows when to change the rules to bring around actual growth and life in people. Which brings us back to this. We have the ability to author life in others. Not because we tell them how to live, but because we become life-giving to them by letting them live, regardless of the group. The idea that what is true must be true everywhere isn't about a religious authority needing to be accepted by everyone. It's about God's authority, God's reign, God's kingdom, and the justice and love being extended to all creation. It's about putting authority where it belongs, truth where it belongs. Rohr then says, we see this inclusivity to an amazing degree in Jesus. And for me, it is the clear indication that this is what it means to practice true religion. True or authentic religion is precisely the one that can see and honor God everywhere, not just in ourselves. True religion is fluid. It's challenging to be open to the grandness of the divine. We cannot possibly comprehend what is in the mind of God. What we can know is that an all-loving God would want all possibilities for all creation. We can trust that the will of God is greater than anything we can potentially comprehend. That the conversation between our beloved and creation continues, and in no way do we have the authority to stop it. Which brings us to our good old cliche, that God is indeed still speaking, and all we need to do is listen.
Blessing of the mud. From our reading, John 9, just verse 15. He put mud on my eyes, then I washed, and now I see. Lest we think the blessing is not in the dirt, lest we think the blessing is not in the earth beneath our feet. Lest we think the blessing is not in the dust, like the dust that God scooped up at the beginning and formed with God's two hands and breathed into with God's own breath. Lest we think the blessing is not in the spit. Lest we think the blessing is not in the mud. Lest we think the blessing is not in the mire, the grime, the muck. Lest we think God cannot reach deep into the things of earth, cannot bring forth the blessing that shimmers with the sludge, cannot anoint us with a tender and grimy grace. Lest we think God will not use the ground to give us life again, to cleanse us of our unseeing, to open our eyes upon this ordinary and stunning world. Let the people say, Amen.